This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And thank you, Hearts of Oak, for joining us. And it is wonderful to have the one, the only, Mr. Steve Bannon join us today. Steve, thank you for your time.
I'm honored to be here.
So great to have you on. And in case our viewers don't know, they should, at War Room on Getter and warroom.org, streaming twice a day, 10 a.m. Eastern time, which is 3 p.m. UK time, and 5 p.m. Eastern time, which is late for the UK. 10 p.m., you can catch your last bit of news, so twice a day. Steve, can I just jump in and ask you about the War Room? The War Room is probably becoming one of the most watched conservative media programs in the last 3 years. I mean, it's intriguing how you've started 2019 and it is now up where it is. What has that been like, that journey?
Look, it's been interesting. I think that it shows that if you provide, you know, information that people can use in their lives and information that they may not get at other places, and you focus on what you think are the big events of the day and particularly how they drive things, that there's a huge audience out there for it. I mean, the audience grows every day and in different parts of the world. We have a global audience. And I think it's just been, you know, it's reaffirmed my belief that there's a massive audience out there of working class and middle class people that hunger and thirst for getting information and news that they can, that can affect their own lives and the lives of their country. So, and it's, and people who are activists, that's our audience is not just judged by scale, it's judged by the agency of the audience and their activism. So it's been, you know, it's a lesson I learned when we launched Breitbart London. And it's really just that experience is really what informed my decision to kind of start War Room.
And of course, on Getter and on Rumble, on the website, it means you can say what you like. So there aren't the restrictions which others face if they rely on mainstream platforms.
Streaming has changed everything. I mean, we're on a bunch of streaming platforms. What I love about the show is that we're on AM radio in the States. We are also on direct television in the States and like places like Wichita and in Boston. We're on streaming services all over the place. Real America's Voice is our major distributor on that. John Frederick distributes us on radio, so we're there. And also, we're subtitled in Mandarin with the G News people, and obviously now with Rumble and Getter, and yep, all these different great platforms that just give people access to it. What we try to do is meet the audience where they are. So I never want just one, you know, I wouldn't just want to be on one TV channel or whatever, because people are watching things on different devices today, and so you want to meet the audience where they are. So it's been good, and it's here's the thing: you've got so many forums out there, so many. I think we average now 150,000 people, 125,000, 150,000 people just in various live chats and live forums during the show that, you know, and then that's not even the podcast. People, you know, they say we're a podcast. We do the podcast afterwards. What we do is just cut the show. We take out all the commercials from the live show and reboot it with sponsors. And, you know, we're getting close to, I don't know, 750,000, 800,000, a million downloads a day. So we're close to 200 million downloads, I think, now on the podcast part of it. So it's what I tell people, if you're a content provider, there's just so many different distribution methodologies out there that if you've got compelling content, you'll find your audience. And not just that, your audience will help you find an audience as they push it out to their friends and their colleagues.
And one thing that blows me away and it makes you quite distinct is the wide breadth of guests you have on. There are so many on the show touching so many of the issues. Is that you've also got a fantastic network of individuals from, I guess, from White House days, from Breitbart days. So I think that kind of sets you apart, having such a wide range of voices.
Well, I think it's also look, we want to cover what we call the signal, not the noise. There's an awful lot of stories out there that we don't chase that other people do because they're better at it. They've got that. They understand those verticals, or they understand what I say is it's not our line of country. on a lot of these things. And we try to think through what are the big important things that are going to drive the world. And therefore, people are going to want to know more about it. And we have a very structured process of how we do that. For instance, we do a lot of capital markets, a lot of global capital markets, a lot of economics, a lot of finance, a lot of geopolitics. And I remember when I started Breitbart London with Raheem and James Dellingpole, and then we did Jerusalem and we did Rome. I remember Ailes told me one time, he says, nobody cares. American audiences don't care about the news. Even when we're in the war, they just focus on the war stuff they're not care about. And I go, I don't think that's right. I think it's just that they haven't had it presented in a certain way. They understand how it actually impacts their life. And we found that the international coverage we do, the global, because it all gets back to how people, what happens in their community, that they actually love it. And it's some of the stuff that drives our thing most, transhumanism, which I think is a huge underlying issue. When we first started that, people go, what are you talking about? This is ridiculous. And we hired an editor just to focus on it. So our focus is on the most important things happening in the world and kind of, as Wellington said, looking over the other side of the hill. And then to get voices in there that can actually, not pundits, but actually break down for people information and data. Because what we try to do is a process where we do nomenclature and then talk about critical path or process, what we call statics and dynamics of process, so that the audience can start to get a mental map. So when they see all these disparate pieces of information, they hit them on something, let's take the Ukraine. They can start to say, okay, I understand how this holds together. Hmm. And I know if this person's spinning me or if this person's accurate, et cetera. So we do that on every big topic we take on. And then we've got, I'm really excited about being able to get really great people on here to talk about that and give additional information. So it's working. I know there's a big thirst and hunger for it. And people, one of the lessons I take, my grandfather only went to the third grade of school. My dad was just a high school graduate, but they were the two most intelligent guys I ever met. And one of the reasons they were working class men, blue collar, but they always read the newspaper and multiple newspapers, right? A big part of Sunday coming home from church, they'd have their papers and go through it. And I understand that working class and middle class people that haven't had the value of a highfalutin education still want to understand the world. And that's what we try to do and to make sure that they then can take that information and through their own personal agency, have an impact on their own lives, but also have an impact on their community's life.
Let's jump into one of the big events coming up, 4.5 months away, midterms, and a lot of our audience will be UK. Tell us what your thoughts are for November. Tell us what you think will happen and whether that'll make any difference.
Well, one quick thing, I think you saw yesterday in France that, you know, you could have an election with a leader and then control the assembly or control the apparatus and stop them down the tracks. I mean, Macron's walking around today in the mumble tank because the populist right, and let's face it, the populist left did kind of pull it off. And I think that's a real reflection of where we are politically in the world. No, my efforts in, which have been from the first day that Biden stole this election, is to prove his illegitimacy and to use that illegitimacy and how they did that as to weaponize that to destroy not just his administration, but the Democratic Party. And I think that if we come together and do our work and really focus on these upcoming elections in November, that we will shatter the Democratic Party as a national political institution. It'll be equivalent to the Whigs afterwards. It'll shatter into a progressive Green Party or Green Wing around AOC and Omar and others, and then it'll be a neocon, neoliberal, you know, Liz Cheney, Hillary Clinton, Wall Street wing. But that from all the way from the school boards to the canvassing boards to the medical boards, all the way up through county supervisors, district attorneys, state legislatures, secretaries of state at the state level, to the House and the Senate, we will literally shatter the Democratic Party. And I think we have the opportunity to do it. And it's what I'm working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day to make sure that we effectuate that. And that's the show is essentially the springboard or tries to be one of the information warfare organizing devices so that people can have a place to come and see how it's going and check in and cross fertilize.
here in Europe, we've kind of the green parties, which are really the loony left. I think in America, that kind of loony left, that all fits within the Democrats. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say there's a wing of the Democratic Party, really the progressive wing, the MSNBC wing, that essentially, yeah, I think, controls a lot of the Democratic Party, much to their chagrin today. You know, Hillary Clinton over the weekend saying that it's gone too far with this gender ideology and gender that. So it's, you know, the Democrats understand that they've lost the moms, they've lost the school boards, you know, whether it's vaccine mandates, mask mandates, all this gender, CRT, gender ideology, all this madness at the schools. We now have suburban moms who, quite frankly, would spit on the floor at the sound of Donald Trump's name, are now part, a big part of this movement, and are adamant and one of the big energizers that we have here. So it's that's a big part of it. The when you say the loony left, the Greens, you do have that aspect you call the loony left, but I would also say that your establishment parties, whether it's the Tories in England or even what's goes as conservatives in France or in Germany, are not nearly as populist or nationalist as the Republican Party has become over the last couple of years.
How do you think it's going to with the Republicans if they take both houses? Does that completely restrict what Biden can do? Again, from the UK, we don't get that. Obviously, you saw what happened in France. But how much does that curtail Biden's ability to do 100%. What he wants to do?
The framers set up initially not to have an imperial presidency, but really the power would be like commons. They structured the House of Representatives to be like commons. So all taxes, all tax policy must come out of there. All appropriations of all money must come out of there. All investigations really have to come out of there. So everything that controls the administration, really, the Senate was really the human resources department for confirmations and for treaties and things like that. It's the greatest fulcrum of power we have. And people have to understand, we're going to impeach Joe Biden. Yeah. We're going to impeach Joe Biden as soon as we take power. There's going to be movements to investigation that leads to the impeachment of Joe Biden. So it is, this is what we're adamantly focused on, and we're going to do it. Now, I'm not saying we're going to remove him from office, for the simple reason is we don't have the votes, at least today, in the Senate. But no, the investigations into Hunter's laptop from hell, into Fauci, into the invasion of the southern border, I actually think into the entire Ukraine situation, which I think needs to be investigated in very detail. So it's, if you're not getting in England, this is going to be, it's the end of the Biden administration. Presidencies are really kind of 2 years now that you've got to control the House and the Senate, which we had that golden 2 years in the first 2 years of the Trump, Trump's first term. No, Biden's finished. And not just that, in our shattering win in November, they're already cutting him loose. He's going to be effectively not a lame duck. He'll be a dead duck as far as any political power. The knives will be out in the White House, and they'll already be, you know, from Gavin Newsom to Oprah Winfrey, trying to think about how they're going to not challenge him. Because I think shortly after his crushing defeat, he'll announce he's not going to run for re-election. So it's a game changer. And it's going to be the Republican Party you're going to see, I think, take office is not the Republican Party you're used to seeing, but people that really know that we have to take action. The country's in a not just managed decline. Now you're seeing the collapse of a complex system, whether it's the baby formula not on the shelves or 3,000 flights canceled over this weekend so that people can't even travel on Father's Day or for Juneteenth. You're going to see changes to all that and a very aggressive investigation and really thwarting of everything the Biden administration wants to do.
But I guess Biden is the Republicans' big asset. I mean, he is so loathed and shows the failure of the Democrat Party to govern effectively. So he is actually an asset. In theory, you want him to hang in there just about until the full elections in 2024, don't you?
Well, he's not. When we say impeach, he's not going anywhere. Like I say, he's not going to be removed from office.
Yeah,
we want to impeach. We have to impeach him. We have to. He's initiated and exacerbated an invasion of our southern border. At the same time, sending, you know, $40-50 billion over to Ukraine to protect the eastern Russian speaking border of between Russia and Ukraine, which obviously, given what's happening in Donbass, they didn't do very well. you have to investigate. I think you have to have a real investigation on January 6th. I think a real investigation ought to take place. We ought to find out the involvement of federal officials in that, and who murdered Ashley Babbitt, how that happened, all of it, right? Including why the intelligence that people like Rodney Davis, who was the ranking member on the House Administration Committee and got a briefing from the Capitol Hill Intelligence Unit the day before, says it's nowhere near what he's heard of intelligence come out afterwards. So all that has to be investigated. Biden's not going to go anywhere. He'll be crippled, if not ruined politically. And I agree with you. He is a tremendous asset as we run in these midterms. But the Democratic Party's not going to let him run again. It's the thing. His deal is over.
Yeah.
And it's obviously they're already the smart moves. Gavin Newsom, as we've said, if you can project out on November 8th with the rest of the Democratic Party shattered, we taking the House, the Senate, school boards, district attorneys. California is right now, if Newsom continues down his path, now it's getting tougher and tougher every day as his policies come to fruition, but he could end up winning the governorship by 20 points and be sitting on $200 million of cash. That will make him the most formidable player in the Democratic Party. And right now, I think 2024 is setting up to be California versus America, woke versus MAGA, Newsom versus Trump. So as I see it right now, unless something dramatically changes, I think that's what 2024 is setting up to be.
Victory in the midterms, is that the starting gun for Trump to announce?
I would strongly recommend the president announce like tomorrow. I think President Trump, I've been a strong advocate that Trump should announce immediately. I think it's important for our movement. I think it also gets the president even more focused. I've been pretty adamant that up until the last couple of weeks, I think his political operation's been a disaster, that he's once again has to carry the entire load. He's made some very terrible, and I'm not shy about this, he made some terrible endorsements. It needs to be better. It needs to be tighter. It needs to be more hard hitting. I think he should announce immediately. And I think that will act as a field clearing exercise for all these naysayers that are out there that are essentially globalists and not really with this populist nationalist agenda.
Tell us about what's happening at the moment, the January the 6th hearings. They seem a facade to us, and actually the UK have barely covered it. So you actually have to look at the US networks. There is zero interest over here in what is happening. Does anyone really in America care what's happening outside the Democratic Party?
I'm not sure any of the Democratic Party. Look, I would like it to be even more covered for the simple reason is I think it helps us. Remember, this weekend, you don't have baby formula. They don't even have women's personal sanitary products on the shelves. The prices are through the roof. You can't even get the types of meat and chicken you wanted before. In the airports, I can't emphasize enough this meltdown we had at our airports. There were 3,000 canceled flights. The airports in Charlotte and in Boston, all these hubs were chaos for hours and hours and hours. That's doing nothing but bringing voters to our side. So, no, I think it's been and the reason is it's too confusing and they're not really doing an investigation. You can't do an investigation if you're not going to get to the bottom of what the intelligence was saying beforehand. You can't get to you find out what happened to Ashley Babbitt. If you're going to do an investigation, we were big advocates of actually doing an investigation that had ranking member and having a minority counsel, and that to do a real investigation. Nancy Pelosi didn't want to do that. It's a show trial, and it's got the interest of some of the uniparty elite in this town and MSNBC. But it's certainly on the ratings. It shouldn't be lost on people. It's gone from prime time on the networks to now, I think tomorrow's 10 o'clock in the morning. It's gone to Tuesdays and Thursday mornings. So, and I think they're cutting back the number of days they're doing it. So it's clearly not driving any interest here. But I think it only helps us. Yeah. And it shows you what the Democrats are focused on when people have, they feel like the country's out of control right now. In that the economy is about to implode on them personally.
When does it actually come to an end?
I think they actually curtailed one. I think it's going to go through I think it's going to go up to the 4th of July break. I think there's going to be two this week, and then I think one or two others, and they'll wrap it up.
Okay. The other day I saw you. I think it was last Thursday. You were outside court. Tell us what that was about.
Well, and I did. I, since President Trump exerted executive privilege, and I, you know, I'm the person that spent more time before investigative committees, whether the Mueller Commission, the House Intelligence Commission, or the Senate, or excuse me, the House Intelligence Committee or the Senate Intelligence Committee. I think more than Reince Priebus and the White House Counsel, Don McGahn. Every time the same thing. President Trump would exert executive privilege, and then they would negotiate, and he would open up to do it. It's exactly what my letter to the committee said. It said, hey, President exerted executive privilege. These things haven't been adjudicated at the Supreme Court yet. When I get further guidance, we'll reach back out to you and see what we can do. Exactly the same thing I did the other three times. The committee decided not to, and the House didn't want to go to a civil thing to try to get me to testify. Mm-hmm. They immediately went to criminal. And so I was in court on a misdemeanor for this for criminal charges of contempt of Congress. And like I said, the court system's got it. It'll play out in the it'll play out in the court system.
Tell us, just finally, I want to ask you about fraud. There have obviously been a lot of efforts to expose what's happened with Mike Lindell, and then more recently in the 2000 Mules with Dinesh. Has that actually hit home with the public? Because I've certainly seen, certainly the 2000 Mules, I thought was quite hard hitting. Has that connected with the public?
I think it has. I think the number of percentage of people that think that Biden's illegitimate is increasing every day. I believe among white males, non-college educated, is at 52-53% right now, which is a stunning number, given how the mainstream media hasn't even talked about it. I think among white females, non-college educated, it's 47 or 48, right at 50%. And that's even before revelations are coming out, really, with 2000 Mules. The Texas State Convention of the Republican Party voted this weekend overwhelmingly, by voice acclamation, it was just incredible if you saw it, to vote on a proposition that Biden's presidency is illegitimate. He's illegitimately elected. You're going to see that start picking up in other states. Now, that doesn't hold any legal weight, but it definitely holds the weight of it's a core belief of the party platform. So I think, no, the more information comes out about things like 2000 Mules, things like Dave Bossie's rig with Zuckerberg, I'm not a machine guy. But you just had CISA, which is the part of the Department of Homeland Security, came out 2 weeks ago and said, oh, nothing happened in 2020, but we have looked at these machines and there's seven different ways to hack them, which heretofore they've already said they're unhackable. And I just go, wow, I'm glad you told me that about 2020. But, you told me before it's the safest thing you could ever use. Now you tell me there's seven different ways they could be hacked. So, no, the more information, and this is for your viewers in the UK, come this January, February, after the Republicans in the Trump movement take over the House, you're going to see a real investigation. You're going to see a real investigation, I think, that gets down to the basics of how Biden and his team, Mark Elias, people stole the 2020 election, that Trump's the legitimately won. I think we're going to hold people accountable. So I would just tell people, stand by. It's all coming in. And we're working on this nonstop to make this happen.
So last question. I read about a story, was it a couple of days ago, in Texas, about a town which went Republican. I think it was 85%, was it, Hispanic voters? That's quite exciting. That shows a change with a demographic that should be Republican actually are now voting Republican.
This is what the equivalent in England. This is what could happen if the Tories were not just an establishment party. The Midland voters, up the same voters of Brexit, in South Texas, hard on the Rio Grande, one of the hardest Scrabble congressional districts in the country, 84% Hispanic. That has not been Republican since until right after the Civil War. So over 120 years, has always been Democratic. And at some point, they were winning by 20 and 30 points, flipped, and we won 52-48 for a young female woman who's the wife of a Border Patrol agent and actually was born in Mexico, came over here with her parents and was naturalized as a citizen. It's a tremendous story, but it also shows you why we're so focused on everything related to the Hispanic community, particularly on these border, that everything the Republican Party establishment says is a lie. What they want is they want security, they want a wall, they want to make sure that the zone's not flooded with tons of illegal aliens that drive down wages, take their jobs. So this is the canary in the mine shaft. Today is the federal holiday over Juneteenth, which is this commemoration of really the messaging of the end of slavery at the Civil War. So for all 4 hours today, we're having fire-breathing MAGA leaders who are Black, African-American, talking about the MAGA agenda for African-Americans. And I keep saying, I think we're going to win 50%. We're going to win 50 to 60% of the overall Hispanic vote this November if we continue to do our job. And I believe that we can win up to 50% of Black men's vote in this country. I think they've become awakened to the fact of what the progressive left is trying to do to them. So I couldn't be more optimistic about what I call this inclusive nationalism or participatory populism. We're ascendant. And as soon as more people in the UK pick up the torch of this, I think you're gonna see a revolution in politics in the UK and driving off that momentum of Brexit. If you can do it before the establishment tries to reverse Brexit, which you have to understand, every second of their life, they're looking how to reverse that, right? To get back into become, because they're all globalists at the end of the day. So I believe that this populist revolt you're seeing in the United States right now that's picking up steam every day will eventually come to the United Kingdom.
Yep. Steve, thank you for your time. If people missed the war room this morning, who did they miss? Who should they check out? What were you covering earlier?
We covered what we had Darren Beatty on, did a great piece about color revolutions and how that's all tied together in this phony Trump January 6th presentation. We had Katie Britt, who's running for the for a Senate down in Alabama. And we had Boris really connecting the dots between the first impeachment and what's happening today all through Ukraine. So that would be of interest. Plus, we had, I think 6 or 8 leading voices of this, everybody from Royce White to Raynard Jackson, the leading voices in this kind of rise of what I call MAGA Black, the African-American voices in the MAGA movement. So it's a show you should not miss. It was pretty, it's one of those ones that's so good. I told guys later, I wish I had the opportunity to watch it and not just be in it.
Well, to our UK viewers, again, that's 3 p.m. UK time and 10 p.m. This second show. Thank you, Steve. And all the details are at the bottom, so our viewers can go there and make sure they're following you on Getter or directly on the website or on Rumble. So thank you, Steve, very much.
Thank you. I love you guys, and I watch your show all the time. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much, and goodbye.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsevoke.org. Thank you for listening.